But the thing is God doesn't call the equipped. He never has. He's never taken a prince or a king with all this power and said, look, you've been doing the wrong thing, now you're going to do the right thing. No, God doesn't call the equipped. He equips the called every time. So if you're called, you got to know that God's got your back. Now, with the whole Young Life thing, as I said, I am working with them now, so I did take that leap, and I did go out, and I realized that my past put me in an interesting position, kind of like Moses, to where I was that. I'm in a great position right now because I can empathize with all these people, kind of like Moses did with the Hebrews, but at the same time, I'm in a position of authority to where I can push them in the right direction, kind of like Moses was with the Egyptians. So what's holding us back? Is it fear? Is it a trust issue? What's stopping us from going as God has called us to do and go and make disciples and listen to God's calling and just go? What's holding us back? I'm sure Moses had a whole lot of fear. I'm sure Moses had a lot of trust issues because, I mean, the people saw right through him. They saw what he did. They saw him murder that Egyptian and bury him in the sand. But God doesn't call the equipped. God equips the called. One of my favorite scriptures of all time is, New Testament scriptures is Matthew 28. The Great Commish. Jesus has died. Well, we're going to talk about that in a couple weeks for Easter. But Jesus died on the cross. He's coming back to the disciples now. He's got holes in his hands, holes in his feet, scars on his head. And he came back from heaven. I mean, he transcended and came back down, and now he's talking to these guys. And it says, then the 11 disciples left for Galilee, going to the mountain where Jesus had told them to go. When they saw him, they worshipped him, but some doubted. Some doubted? Doubted Jesus? Doubted the man who has holes in his hands, holes in his feet, scars on his head? How can you doubt that? They all saw him die. They saw him hang from that tree and died an innocent death. What's there to doubt? These are the 11 at this point, because Jesus and Judas aren't on good terms anymore. These are the 11 people that followed him for 3 years. Followed this man for 3 years, saw him do miracle after miracle, and they doubted him? Now, I'm not trying to downplay the disciples. I'm not saying that they weren't great men, but I'm just saying they were men. They doubted Jesus, just like all of us probably have, you know, issues with our faith, and we doubt our faith every now and then. They doubted Jesus. And this was back, like I said, the good old days. They were looking at him like, I've never seen Jesus before. And my prayer every now and then is that he would give me something a little more tangible, like I said before, than a thought or an image or an idea, something tangible to hold on to. These guys had him. They followed him for 3 years. They saw him multiply fish. They saw him walk on water. They saw him do all kinds of crazy stuff, but they still doubted him. It just blows my mind that these are the 11 people that God put more responsibility on than anybody else in human history. They said, go. God said, go, make disciples. God said, they wrote the Bible. These are the Gospels. Their accounts. God put more responsibility on them than anyone else in history. And they were people just like the rest of us. So what's holding us back? What's stopping us from going out and doing the next great thing? I've had the opportunity, like Ray said, I'm in the National Guard. I'm in the Delaware Army National Guard. I've had the opportunity to meet some great people. One of which was actually through the Army. We were in basic training, and if anybody knows anything about basic training, it's a long process. It's such a long process. So I was talking to one of my friends, and you get to know people very well because you don't have a whole lot to do but talk to people a lot of times. So I got to know this guy. His name was Rossetti. I got to know him very well, and we were having one of our long late-night talks. I think we were up like on guard duty or something, defending the barracks from, I don't know, monsters or something. I don't know what they expected us to defend. But we had our guns, and we were on base, and we were walking around. So anyway, we were talking about, we got into some pretty deep conversations, you can imagine, at 4 o'clock in the morning. But we were talking about true repentance and what it means. What it means to be forgiven, and what it means to just completely turn around from what you know that you've done that was wrong. And we were talking, and I didn't realize this at the time, but I was getting ready to say, we were having a conversation, and I didn't realize it, but I was getting ready to say one of the dumbest things I've ever said in my life to this new friend of mine. But anyway, we were talking about repentance and what it means. And at one point, we were talking about being forgiven. And he asked me, he said, so what's holding you back? Because I told him about Young Life and how I was struggling. He said, what's holding you back from going and doing Young Life? And I was like, well, Rossetti, to be honest with you, I know that God's forgiven me for what I've done. I know that. I know that Jesus died, but I'm having trouble forgiving myself for what I've done. And I didn't realize it, but that was probably one of the dumbest things I've ever said. Because we were walking back and forth, and he was behind me, and I said it, and I was like, "You there? Are you still there?" Because, you know, he didn't say anything. He was just thinking. And I could hear the frustration in his voice when he finally answered me. He was like, "Cliff." Or, excuse me, he called me McCall, not Cliff. He said, "McCall." He said, "Jesus died. That innocent man died. The innocent man, I mean, he lived a perfect life, and he died on that tree for you and all the crap that you've done and all the crap that you're getting ready to do." He said, "He died for that, so that you won't be held back by that, and you're going to go and do." He said, "That's what the whole thing's about. Jesus died to wipe everyone clean so that we can't be, you know, we can't sit here and say, 'Oh, well, I'm not worthy. I haven't forgiven myself. God can't use me because I didn't follow the rules like he said.'" No. Jesus died to wipe all that clean. And he said to me, he said, you could tell he was getting heated at this point, because you could tell the gears were turning. He goes, "And Cliff, or McCall," he said, "for you to sit here and say that God's forgiven you and you haven't forgiven yourself, well, not only are you minimizing God's power," he said, "but what you're saying is that innocent man hung on that tree and died and had those holes in his hand for nothing. That man lived a perfect life and was killed for it for nothing, because you can't get over the fact that you messed up however many years ago, or you're afraid that you're getting ready to mess up in however many years. But that's what we do when we can't let go and let God, because that's essentially what Jesus stands for. He's wiping the slate clean for us to go and do. So what's holding us back? There's nothing holding us back. There's no guilt. There's no past transgressions. There's no fear. There's no trust issues that could ever hold us back from going and doing, because God says, "Go and do. I've got you." What Jesus did that day wipes everything clean so that we can go and do. So what's stopping us from evangelizing? What's stopping us from going to God's calling? So let's do it. Let's go. Let's start a small group. Let's start a Bible study. Let's go help with Sunday school. Let's, I don't know, something. Let's be a witness in our workplace at the very least. Let's live our lives to where people walk up to us and ask us, "What's different about you? There's something different, but I can't figure it out. You don't have a potty mouth like the rest of them, but I'm just not quite sure what's different." Let's do it. Let's go. Let's have people ask us why we bow our heads before we eat. Let's have people ask us why we don't talk the way other people do. What's stopping us? What's stopping us from going and doing and making disciples like Jesus called us to do? I just want to say, excuse me, one more thing. Like I said, I've had the privilege of meeting some pretty smart people in my life, and one guy, he said, the true definition of faith in Jesus Christ, the true definition of faith in Jesus Christ is standing before God, saying, "I know who I am, I know that I'm broken, I know that I'm beaten." Standing before God, saying, "I know who I am, and I know who you are, I know that you're perfect. I know that you're flawless, I know that you're all-powerful, I know that you're the creator." Knowing who you are, and knowing who God is, and standing before God anyway, and saying, "I'm here. Use me. Do whatever you can with me. I know there's not much I can do, but anything, just do anything." Knowing who you are, knowing who God is, and standing before him anyway and saying, "Please take me and use me." That's what true faith in Jesus Christ is. Because that's what he died for. He died to break down that wall so that we can stand here and look at God and say, "Do something, anything." To look at God and say, "Look, God, I know I'm a 1,000-piece jigsaw puzzle with 250 of them missing. But standing before God and saying, I know who I am. But the thing about that jigsaw puzzle is if you get the right person to put it together, there still might be something good to look at the end of the day." So that's faith in Jesus. The people of the Bible were people, just like the rest of us. They weren't almighty. They weren't all powerful. The only one who was almighty and powerful was God, and he's the one who's telling us to go. So who are we going to listen to? That's all I have. I'm going to hand it back to Debbie. I think she's going to close us in prayer.